Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Dr. Debra.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly. How are you?
Off with the headphones now.
She hates them. I only do it because you do it. It's so funny.
You look cool doing it.
Oh my gosh, well, I was just telling you that my kitty Prowler, he's like taking a turn for the worse, and now we got good news, and he's up and down, and we have high hopes for him, but he's going to be undergoing like major serious treatments for the next 8 weeks consecutively. We have to take him to the vet, but they love him there. They call him the perfect patient, such a gentleman, and so handsome.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
Yes. The doctor calls us and says, he is such a gentleman. Oh. He comes with us wherever we want to take him. He doesn't fight us. He's just the perfect cat.
And what a sweet soul.
He's not even like that scared now. We get him in the car. He doesn't howl at all. Like he used to pee first. Yeah. Right on Chris's lap. Uh-huh. Now, Chris was able, because I couldn't take off work, to wrap him in a towel like a burrito, put him on his lap, and carry him to the vet.
Wow.
35 miles away.
No way.
In the towel. And he just sits there.
That's so cute.
He's so cute. So precious.
But that's great news,
everybody.
Though. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yay, good. Kitty, kitty,
we'll
kitty.
Introduce our guest in a moment.
Yes.
This beautiful girl. But let's, maybe we... Well,
who wears many hats.
Yes, exactly. Many. Exactly.
Well, do you have any updates?
Well, too funny. Peeing. Moose has been peeing like in the middle of the night almost every night now for like a month.
Moose
in
the dog, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Moose is my firstborn.
The vaginal birth.
Only vaginal birth. But he's been peeing in the middle of the night. And so we've taken him to the vet because I got a little worried. He's been eating more. And so they ruled out diabetes. So that's good.
Good.
But
kidney
we'll
function?
See. I don't know. We'll see.
So lots of testing.
Yeah. I mean, they did blood work and stuff. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Okay. So we'll be impoverished together because these little buggers will take our bank accounts but feed our souls.
It's true. It's so worth it. You know? I mean.
Well, do you have pet insurance?
Yes. I have pet insurance. Oh. And I was thinking about cloning Moose. Like, that's how crazy I am.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not kidding. I literally talk about money. I've had the conversation with David where I'm like, do you think we should clone him? Like, I'm dead serious.
Oh
yes, it's interesting. There was a great special about it on This American Life, and there was somebody who cloned their cow. The cow's name was Chance. They cloned it.
But they're
it.
Not the same.
No. And
no.
The cow was Second Chance, the second one.
Second Chance.
And they said there was like slight off, and it was hard because you think that that's the animal, and it's not. So
it would have to be different. It's a different organic. Even if the DNA is the same, there's still something that must be different, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and how they bond and interact and all that.
Yeah.
Well, you're smart to have pet insurance. I'm going to get pet insurance on Mr. Bob because we don't have it. And this is like, it's unbelievable.
Yes.
And, you know, you don't want to spare the expense. But I got to tell you, anybody listening and has listened to this story over time, do not feel guilty if you cannot do that because it is it could take someone's college fund.
Yeah.
It's that, you know, and people will sometimes have that suffering guilt about that. But you know what? If you can't do it, you can't do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, because it's not hundreds, it's thousands.
In
the tens of thousands.
Right. Anyway.
But thank you for letting me share that.
Yes, of course.
And I pray for a moose.
Yeah, I know. So hopefully. Yeah, I mean, he's acting okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just more hungry and like jumping at the table now, like he used to do. But yeah, so.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk
now
about...
Now on to this lovely lady.
Yes, but wait, we got to talk about last week really quickly.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
She's so excited to have you on. She, like, can't wait.
No, I want to know about what happened last week.
I know.
Very fitting. We actually had Denise Mange, who has an upcoming book, which she didn't talk about, Healing with Chakras and Addressing How Our Pets... how they communicate with us. And she gave us some tidbits on our own pets.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
she didn't mention anything about...
No, she didn't.
Moose.
No, but she said we might not find the hamster. We found the hamster.
You did?
Yes.
You
wait,
lost your
but she
like...
said where that she told you where did
no,
it not
it was
happen that way?
Upstairs in my bathroom,
not hiding in the basement,
not grounded in the basement.
Oh my
no,
goodness.
I'm literally going to the bathroom, and I was like, and this thing like scurries along, scared the bejesus out of me. I was like,
a rat? No,
yes.
It's my hamster.
We lost this hamster twice now, and I'm like, I cannot believe that we find it. The first one we found after 3 days, I thought for sure dead. No. And then the second time, London opened up the cage. Out he went.
Bolted.
We didn't know. And we didn't even know. It wasn't like, oh my God, get him. You know, it was like literally like the next day we're like, London, did you leave the cage open? He's like, yes.
Yes. Do you think he did it on purpose?
You know, my husband thinks so.
I don't. Or he didn't want to get told off. So yeah. He was like, I'm going to pretend this didn't happen.
Exactly.
So
it's now going to be Houdini Hamster and Damien for, did you ever see the movie The Omen?
No.
Oh, I'm only teasing, but it was a possessed devil child. Yes.
Oh.
It was the one movie I saw when I was a teenager that The Exorcist could care less. Yeah. Nothing scary. That movie, I had nightmares for 6 months. The guy I was dating at the time had to literally carry me out. It scared me so much because it seemed so real.
Yeah.
You know, instead of it just being like horror that you can kind of go, this is just so
too much
comic
right.
book.
Yeah.
That, it, just the story, the thing, it was so convincing. Lee Remick, do you remember that actress?
No.
Oh, she's brilliant in it.
Oh, really?
And this boy was like literally, like he played the devil like perfectly.
Oh.
It was eerie. Anyway, I'm totally kidding about London. But he's very mischievous and very playful. And he 100%. Wants to test out consequences, right? What really happens?
Boundaries.
Does mom get a rise when I let the hamster
out?
Yes.
Yes. I'm gonna try not to.
So I can't wait till the day he listens to these shows, your children, and they go, Mom, you
know,
really?
No, but thank God. I'm hoping in 10 years, like, they're, you know, there'll be some sort of different technology. They won't be able to access it. That's my hope.
Okay.
We'll see.
All right. Now, drum roll. Yes. Well, since you had the pleasure of meeting this lovely lady before I did, why don't you share your
story?
Okay.
So I am so excited. And we're on Facebook Live, by the way.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, everybody. Woo!
Yeah. So if you wanted to tune in, go to LA Talk Radio Facebook page, and you can see us and hear us. So Helena Grace Donald is a body positive image advocate, self-love mentor, and empowerment coach for women. After recovering from severe body image issues, binge eating, and bulimia, it became Helena's mission to inspire girls to lead from a place of self-love and self-acceptance and to understand the value and inner power that comes from truly loving and accepting the skin that they're in. She spreads this message through her platform, Girl Unfiltered, and just recently wrapped up an international book tour for her first book, Learning to Love the Girl in the Mirror, where she was featured on CNN, CBS, BBC, NBC, Good Day Washington, The Irish Times, and many more, sharing this message of self-acceptance and body positivity. She's also an EFT tapping and matrix re-imprinting practitioner, dog lover, and water baby. Welcome.
I love dogs too, guys.
Yes, exactly. So happy to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, we can have a group therapy here because you're recovering from a eating disorder. I am. You are.
Isn't that crazy? 100% of us in this room have had eating disorders.
I know.
Doesn't that just show you? I think it's like 1 in 3 now women.
Is it?
But there's 3 of us here and we've all had one.
Did you do any research on the statistic I heard a while back? I actually used to specialize in eating disorders, not so much anymore because of my history.
Yeah.
But there was a study that came out with Fiji. Women from Fiji, and something like they introduced American television to them, and somehow from 0 to 30% of the young girls ended up with an eating disorder.
Yeah, I read that too.
It's like a profound, statistically significant
thing. And I think that it was a positive thing to, you know, be curvier and have a bigger shape or size in their culture.
Right.
And
as soon as they started to see American magazines and media, it changed that thinking. Mm-hmm. So can you imagine, we've seen this from day one.
Right.
Right. Exactly. It does help to look at that question differently. Does art imitate life or does life imitate art?
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Is it the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
Right,
so
exactly.
To me, that one said there's a huge influence of the media in our presentation of young girls.
Yeah.
I mean, I have so many, I work at a treatment center right now, and even though it's drug addiction primarily, so many of the women there have an underlying eating disorder.
So many women do.
Do.
Yes.
And the statistics are very, very high for how many women suffer with eating disorders. And let's just say there's men too. Like it's not, you know, there are men suffering too. It's just more common in women.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many women walking around with this underlying, what I call little miss critical, who, you know, they wake up in the mirror and look in the mirror and they beat up what they see. They compare themselves with other women. Mm-hmm. They may not be physically starving themselves. They may not be physically throwing up, so they will never be diagnosed.
Exactly.
But they're still walking around with this completely warped body image.
Right.
Yes.
And they suffer for the rest of their lives. And you guys know, what does that have an effect on?
Everything.
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I remember when my eating disorder started in grad school, and I went to a therapist at my grad school, and they were like, "Well, you're not that thin." Like,
oh my
it was
gosh.
Like it was like and it was like it was just this idea that if you are not in this box,
right.
then you're fine. Then
right.
you know, and they didn't take into effect. Well, no, I'm obsessed with food.
Right.
I'm obsessed with my body image. It's unmanageable. The first thing I do when I wake up is think about my body image, and the last thing I do at night is think about it.
Yeah.
And it's like that wasn't even, you know, an effect. So I'm glad you brought that up.
I can totally relate to that. Mm-hmm. And that's still going on. I know in the UK, like the NHS, you have to be within a bracket to actually get the treatment or the help. I don't know exactly what it's like here, but
you mean funded, like socially funded?
To go and get help.
Oh,
yeah, to get government funded help. So there are some girls that could be bigger, and they're going in there that they don't fit in that bracket, and
so
they're being told they're not thin enough to get the treatment. So what does that do?
Right.
It creates this completely warped sense
cycle.
That is
terrible.
And I was bigger during my eating disorder, which many people realize. When I had bulimia and binge eating, I was a bigger size because of so many reasons I've written about in the book. But it wasn't until I stopped dieting, stopped binge eating, stopped throwing up every meal I ate, that my body found an equilibrium that was my healthy weight.
Right.
So there are some girls suffering out there of all shapes and sizes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's actually really kind of pathetic in a part of our science and thinking that it's like, even for anorexia, you have to lose, what is it, 10% or 15% of your body weight
right.
a certain period of time. But the weight almost seems irrelevant. Obviously,
yes,
if somebody's emaciated and starving, that's a whole different arena of treatment. But it's the attitude that's the worst. That's the hardest.
Exactly.
I've gotten people to change their eating habits, but they're miserable inside.
Yes, exactly.
Because that is the thing that carries forward for the longest and the biggest
impact. It's all about mindset. And,
and
it wasn't until I went on that journey of figuring out, who am I when my relationship with self isn't dependent on the number on the scales? Who am I when I'm not comparing myself negatively to others? Who am I? Like, who actually am I? Where does my self-worth come from? That was the empowerment I realized. And that's the mission I'm trying to spread, is that it's so much deeper than skin level.
Sure.
But it is. It's mindset.
Right.
It's completely mindset.
So tell us, what was the turning point for you? Like, when did you just kind of say, oh my gosh.
The positive one or the...
Give us both. I would love to hear that.
I mean, I think certainly from, I want to say, the age of 12, like, this was something I was very much aware of. And we were just talking about this. I came from a family where weight was an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, not that my parents or anyone was overweight in my family. It was actually, to be deemed overweight or fat was like a really negative thing in my family. We were really controlled by the foods. It was all non-fat. It was all counting calories. And my dad and my mom are vegetarian. They're very health conscious. My dad, I would say he had a warped view on food. And on top of that, my mom knew I wanted to model and be an actress. And I really think that there was, I love my parents. They're incredible human beings. But my mom wanted me to be happy and see my dreams come true. And she was thinking, well, the people we're seeing on screen are this size.
There it is. Yeah.
And I was going through puberty and my body was changing and, you know, fluctuating. And I wasn't happy in myself. So I was secretly eating. And my mom watched my weight go up. And it was this. My inner little Miss Critical was formed from what I was hearing from my parents, as well as the internal voice that was going on inside of me. And it just got to the point where I was going on from diet to diet. Like, I'm talking the age of 15, when you really should not be dieting.
Sure.
And I wasn't losing any more weight because my metabolism
was
pretty much stopped.
Mm-hmm,
it was, you know, messed up. And when I didn't see the number on the scales going down anymore, and I was doing everything I could, I was despairing as to what I could do that was going to work. And I started to throw up my meals. And that was the only release I found, because of all the pressure we're putting on ourselves as young women. I mean, you're not even talking about schoolwork and peer pressure and exam anxiety.
Right.
And a lot of teen girls do not know how to deal with the stresses of that,
as
well as comparing themselves to what they're seeing in the magazines
of
full-grown women.
Or now on Instagram and all the social media, I have people that are just like, going dying inside with what they see constantly. Right. Yeah. And then they can't take a stop. Right. Yeah. A lot of times I used to tell my clients, avoid buying any of those women's magazines. And that was pretty easy. You know, don't look at them.
I haven't bought one in years.
Yeah, because it's just going to, it's like self-torture.
Sure.
Yeah.
How do you tell somebody whose primary method of social interaction now is through social media, you can't be on social media? They'll look at you and say, no, I have to be.
Well, I there's a chapter in the book, it's called Step Out of the Perfectionism Complex. Uh-huh. And I really break down just what advertising is and social media. And we do actually still have the power to choose what we feed our minds with. And I think if you're following somebody that really makes you feel insecure and not good about your life, hit unfollow.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't need to see that. Right. You have got the choice. I love my Instagram feed. I follow people who inspire me and people who are uplifting. Uh-huh. And just remember, you know, we're all guilty of this. We post the pictures that are good times in our lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not everyone's showing their real side or what's going on behind the scenes. It doesn't show how somebody feels on the inside or any insecurities they may be having. Supermodels can be some of the most insecure people I've ever met.
Yeah. Oh,
so don't compare your behind the scenes to someone else's highlight. Real.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget good filter, lighting, makeup. I mean, all of that.
Tape.
Yeah. All of that makes such a difference. Yes.
Totally. Yeah. And that's all okay. If that's your form of self-expression, use social media to make a positive impact in the world. If that's your thing, go for it. There's no judgment around it. But if you're following somebody that you makes you feel horrible about yourself, don't go there.
It's almost like morbid curiosity, right? When somebody stops at a murder scene. Right?
Yeah.
They want to look. They want to see. It's almost like feeding the beast. Mm-hmm. And some people just feel so compelled that they can't stop it. I mean, it's just, it's really just, barbaric.
Okay, so then how did you, so what was the moment for you?
Wow. So, I mean, I really hit what was my rock bottom. At this point, I mean, I was throwing up. I couldn't even eat a meal without my body telling me to throw up.
That you had
You know what I mean? Like, compulsion. It was like a compulsion. It was like my, I would
reflex.
Get sweaty palms. I did, I don't want to go into details, but it got pretty bad.
Wow.
And like a drug addict, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the truth.
Was like,
it could feel like that.
For a long time, I really had to learn to eat my meals slowly and digest because of that reflex. But I actually went to my mom. I was like, I remember this night so vividly, and I broke down in tears. And my mom was about to go and walk my dog with my dad, and I said, "Mom, please don't leave right now." And I admitted what I'd been doing. I said, "Look, this I've been throwing up, and I know I have to change something. I don't want to do this anymore. Please don't leave my side, because the moment you leave, I know what I'm going to go and do."
That was so brave of you.
It was.
Wow. I had to do something. Yeah. Like, I didn't. Nothing was working anyway. Right. It wasn't making me feel good about myself.
Exactly.
And my mom, who is a therapist, actually started tapping with me. And that was the first time we've talked about this, the first time I ever tapped. And so when we tap, we rate in the beginning how strong a feeling is. So I was 10 out of 10 on I want to throw up. So I tapped on that feeling and got it down to maybe a 4, which was huge for me.
Can you show what that
looks like? Yeah, so people think it's like, we're not going to put on dancing shoes
and
tap. But we all have acupressure points on our body, and we can hold on to a lot of trauma in those points on our body. And by focusing on the feeling that we're having and tapping, and also accepting the feeling, not trying to make it wrong or push it away, you release some of that trauma that's going on in your body, and you release the energy surrounding it. So when we begin tapping, it's normally a setup statement that you tap on your karate chop point. So I would have said that night, even though I really feel like I need to throw up, I'm choosing to love and accept myself through this feeling. And I repeat that. And then you do a round of tapping on the face and the body, and it seems really weird at first. Like, it really does. And then you get so used to it. And it seems complicated, but it's not. Like, I have clients, we do it over the phone together. Yeah. We do it over Skype. I've had clients who have learned to tap through their sessions with me, who've woken up in the middle of the night with a migraine and couldn't find any paracetamol or whatever. And they realized, hang on, I could tap on this.
Wow.
And it goes away.
Wow.
So it works
curious
in so many areas.
Christine Wheeler, was that the lady we had on?
Yeah, I think that was.
That name rings a bell.
Canada.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so she was fun. She did that with us. But that's amazing. I mean, what a beautiful skill set to have.
It was great to learn that. I think I was maybe 18 or 19 at that age. So I became fascinated with it, and I've used it through breakups, through experiences, through all kinds of things.
I was telling you, so I don't even know if you know this. I've been to a hypnotherapist. I've been to a regular therapist about my I've been a past life regression therapist for my vomit
phobia.
Your
fear of vomiting, yes.
Fear of and the only thing that has worked is tapping.
Oh. Yeah.
Yes. It's lessened
it.
It's lessened it so much. I mean, still have it. But it's lessened it, you know, a lot. And I use it with my older son with anxiety. And he really took to it.
Yeah. So kids love it.
So in my eating disorder, I was similar to you, but I was actually very underweight and bulimic. So bulimorexic is what they used to call it at the same time. Also came from a food obsessed, weight obsessed family background.
Yeah.
But curiously, your fear of vomiting, you didn't throw up. Did you do laxatives or did you do?
No, not laxatives. No. It was probably over exercising and just
that form.
Just eating salads.
Which, to our listeners, please understand that bulimia is not simply about eating and throwing up. There's many, it's about restriction or compensation for what you have been eating on.
Exactly.
However you do it that.
I would not eat for the whole day sometimes, but I would still binge eat and throw up. Like,
which is a recipe for that, actually. The longer we wait to eat, they've taken normal weight eaters or normal weight people without eating disorders and put them under the conditions that a bulimic's mind puts a bulimic under, and they ended up binging at the end of the day on ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas they started with taking like a quarter cup or half a cup, I'm done. But then they went through deprivation and all that stuff, and then they were hoarding the ice cream.
Makes sense.
It makes sense.
Changes the brain.
That's why I say ditch the diet.
Ditch the diet.
Right. I mean, that is a billion-dollar industry. To anyone that's listening right now who may not be suffering with an eating disorder, know anyone that is, but finds themselves restricting, finds themselves looking for the next diet. I mean, look into the research of what dieting, as you say, does to our minds and our bodies. It is literally coming from a place of restriction. And the moment you start counting the calories and restricting food groups, you, I believe, completely get out of tune with your natural instincts.
Yes.
And you are eating from a place of restriction and may not be full-blown hate, but you're doing it probably to have, you know, to lose weight. You don't like the way you're feeling right now, so you go on the diet to restrict and to feel better about yourself at the end of said diet. But when you come at it from that energy of restriction, I think it wreaks havoc on the metabolism and the mind. And as you say, many people end up falling off of the diet bandwagon because they've been restricting for so long and end up in this vicious diet cycle.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. And it's so damaging long term for the body, too. It takes so much longer to recover when your metabolism has decided that it has to shut down because it believes you're not going to feed it. And I've also come to this conclusion, and I know many have come to it, but I really see it in life and in my practices. When we don't have self-acceptance, we inevitably create resistance.
Absolutely.
So if we're denying, depriving, and hating our bodies, what's our body going to do?
Yeah.
On some level?
100%. That's why I believed I put more weight on during those years in my life. I know for sure it was, actually, because the moment I stopped hating myself and hating my body, it was almost like the hate melted off of me.
Yes.
It's
like, I'll go to the beach and wear a bathing suit when I lose 10 pounds.
Yes.
You never go to the beach and you never lose that 10 pounds because your body says, screw you, I deserve to go swimming in the sun if I want to.
Yeah.
It's that self-loathing. Oh, and I remember literally cooking, like, and I can't really cook, but I try.
I always say that, stop neuro-linguistic programming.
Yes.
Tap her out of that.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Even though I feel like I can't cook, I still fully love it.
Yeah. Wait. Yeah, please tap. Do it right now.
But we'll do that in a minute. But no, I would make these, like, really nice meals for my husband, like lasagna and everything, and then I wouldn't eat it. Mm. And it's like, what are you telling yourself? You are not good enough. He's worthy of this meal. Exactly. He's worthy of it. You are not. So you are you're training your brain and your body that you're not good enough. And so of course you're just not going to feel good.
And was that because you don't like cooking? Because it's still remnants of your former eating disorder, Tapper.
No, I don't think that's it. I try so hard.
I missed you for 2 weeks. I didn't see you in person. I tease her a lot. She takes it very well.
I do.
Was that coming from a place of like, I need to look a certain way to feel good about myself?
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah. It started with me. Mine was, I moved out to LA. I worked at this deli and gained, I don't know, like maybe 5-10 pounds. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. And then I went to a commercial weight loss program and got obsessed. And that was just like the, like, it was like, it was all, like, I had never had an issue before that. So I was like 20, 22, and I had never really, it was fine. And then once I sort of got obsessed and counted the calories, I couldn't get off that hamster wheel.
Yeah. Definitely. Frightening.
So then what do you think about programs like Weight Watchers that are not really a diet program per se, right, but about just learning a new relationship to food, but you're still counting points, right, not calories?
Yeah, and I know that these work for some people, and that's great. And I'm not saying not to eat from a healthy place and look after your health and if you need to physically lose weight, but I'm talking about doing it from a very healthy place, not talking about coming from a place of hate and restriction.
Absolutely.
Right. And it's really interesting because I was in the UK on my boat tour, and while I was there, they they launched something about making summer camp, Weight Watcher camps, available for children of a certain age that needed to lose weight. And there was this huge uproar about it. I mean, when you really look into what goes on in the diet industry and how much a company like Weight Watchers makes, do you not think that it's actually a really smart move for them to get people hooked on that at the age of 16?
Of course.
How long are they going to be hooked on it? How much are they going to depend on that? So while I believe looking after your body and being healthy is great, and if you feel really positive about taking an action like Weight Watchers and that feels right for you, great. But for me, going to weekly weigh-ins, having to count points and calories, instead of focusing on how can I nourish my body today? How can I feed it from a really loving place? Like, that was the biggest switch for me. Is I've not dieted, I mean, since I was in recovery and since I learned to love the girl in the mirror, as the book says. And I don't worry about putting on weight.
Right.
Why? Well, number one, because I'm not restricting myself, so I don't feel the need to eat a carton of ice cream like I did before by myself in one sitting. And I'm eating from a place of, if I'm loving myself and I love my body and the skin I'm in, how can I love myself even more through the foods that I eat? So I'm passionate about cooking healthy meals. I enjoy going for pizza and drinking red wine with my boyfriend. I enjoy I enjoy the passion. Like, my boyfriend makes songs when I talk about food. I start using my hands a lot. I'm so passionate about it. And I'm telling you, I do not worry about putting weight on because I'm moving and eating from a place of love, and my body digests it from that loving place.
Well, exactly. I think there's something spiritually to that. Like, we are nourishing ourselves from the beginning of saying, like, oh, I deserve this, I need this, I think you digest it better versus like, oh, I really don't want this salad, but I should eat it because, you know, and you're like, you're literally like forcing, you know, something that's not right.
Yeah.
So I believe spiritually.
And it's also one of the greatest pleasures available to us that is not dangerous per se. Sure. A diabetic who's constantly eating dark chocolate or light chocolate.
Dark chocolate.
You're not diabetic. No, she's a dark chocolate.
I love dark chocolate.
I forgot to bring the I got you some more of the hands off, get the fuck off my chocolate.
Love it.
Oh, I forgot to bring it. Oh, I was going to bring it 2 weeks ago. I will bring it next time. Something to look forward to.
Thank you. Yes.
There's a little winery up in Santa Barbara
has this,
what's it called? Get your hands off my chocolate.
Exactly.
And it's 85% or 88% dark chocolate.
That sounds amazing.
I love it. And she bought it for me one time. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Yeah. So she always buys it.
And isn't that a spiritual, like, thing for you that you eat, that you savor this piece of chocolate?
I put it in the freezer, and it's like, it's just like a treat.
Let it melt in your mouth.
It's so good. But yes, and
it's a ritual. Food is a ritual. And I think that we all have, no matter who we are, we have some form of emotional connection to food. First of all, I mean, it's the first thing we do when we're born. We feed from our mothers. And then we learn our food connection from our parents.
Right.
Yep. So we can have very negative emotional connections to food, or we can have really positive ones. Either we've had to relearn what a positive one is. Or we're stuck in the emotional connection that our parents maybe taught us. Like, we had parents, for me, it was a lot about restriction and low calorie foods. And I made that decision that was how you eat. For some, comfort comes from food, because when they were sad, their parents gave them food, or it was you come from a family that was a lot about food, right? There was a lot of an emotional family connection. Let's eat a lot, feed you up, feed you up, feed you up. And so What does somebody do that has an emotional connection to food that way when they're sad, instead of maybe connecting into what truly is going on right. with them maybe and expressing that, right. the first thing they do is go for the chocolate and eat, mm-hmm. which is understandable because that's their emotional connection. Right. And the first thing I do with my clients is try to unpack where their emotional connection right. is coming from. Like mm-hmm. I have one who is... feels like she has no emotional connection to food because it was all about, again, restriction. Her parents made her feel guilty for eating. So she has no passion around food, and we're reigniting that. And that, so that we can have many different layers, but right. but it's really, really tapping in and tuning in. Why do I feel the need to eat this? Mm-hmm. So right. when I was learning to love food again and love myself, I was asking myself that question, like, do I really want to eat this and binge eat, or do I need to have a good cry and write in my journal and right. express how I'm right. actually feeling, or tap, right. whatever yeah, exactly. it was, you
yes,
know?
Sure.
As you were talking, this really strange thought came to my mind. It's like, so with, it's a biological need to eat, mm-hmm. right? So is peeing and pooping mm-hmm. and all these yeah. things. You don't see people walking around restricting their peeing.
Exactly. Right? I think I read
or
that
trying
somewhere.
To overpee. Yes. Right? Because yes. because it's not, we don't have any juice attached to that.
Right.
Well, maybe somebody who has like a bladder infection, sure. they have to pee all the time and they get embarrassed, right. etc. But by and large, our parents don't tell us not to pee.
No one's making
or
you
not
feel
to
guilty.
Do this right. Or feel guilty. So we don't have issues with that. We don't do
That's
the same
so
thing.
True.
But we fuck with mm-hmm. our biological need to eat mm-hmm. yeah. because we put so much attached mm-hmm. to that.
Yes.
To either degree. It's just, totally. I never thought about it that
like,
way.
Like there's a meme out on Instagram right now, something like, no one tells you to go drink a glass of water when you need to eat. Like you may, oh no, when you need to pee, no yeah. one says drink a glass
of water.
You may
instead,
not need to pee.
Right.
Instead but when we're hungry,
don't eat.
Don't yes. eat. Drink a glass of water
right?
instead.
It's silly. To
hey, maybe you just need to eat.
Exactly.
So the
yes.
idea is really matching up with what our needs are, yeah. right? If you have an emotion, that's not the time to eat because yeah. your emotion yeah. isn't a desire.
And if after 30 minutes, you still want to go get some pizza.
Right, enjoy it.
Enjoy it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know what
yeah.
I was just thinking about? My grandma, who I was super close to, loved dearly, like full was never an option. Like, you know, I'd be eating and I'm like, no, I'm full. And she'd be like, no.
Because like, that was her way of giving you love.
Exactly.
Right?
Like you can't be full. And she'd almost be insulted. Like,
yeah.
Oh, no. Like you have to eat more. I've cooked this, you know,
yeah.
but I also think she grew up in a time where you didn't, it was like you couldn't leave food on the plate because
yeah.
there were people starving in the Depression or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's like so interesting.
Right, which
yeah.
is so interesting. My father, a Holocaust survivor, was the opposite. He would say don't leave food on your plate because people
yeah.
are starving. But he was obsessed with fat. That if
really?
You're fat, it's bad. It's bad. He would mm-hmm. talk about everybody in the world according to their body weight
yeah.
and level
and
of beauty. And fat was bad. Thin was good. My mother was a model, so that
right.
made sense. My
mm-hmm.
mother gained 1 ounce. Everybody was on a diet. We had to have weigh-in in the closet, like in a dark closet.
Wow.
You have to get on the, yes,
wow.
if we were a little bit overweight, then things were removed from the house.
Was he weighing you?
My mother was weighing me.
Wow.
My father was commenting when I had puberty. He goes, oh, boy, you're getting fat.
Wow.
And I'm like, that was it. That was the
no wonder
moment.
You developed an eating
of course,
disorder.
Right? And again, I just was curious if you knew anything about the people who really did suffer starvation. Is there a greater prevalence of eating disorders or attitude? I don't know.
I think that there can certainly be in our DNA. I mean,
yeah.
things
yeah.
that
yeah,
things
sure.
that our family have gone through, that's in your DNA. You was a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah,
so that
right.
mentality is seeping through.
Mm-hmm.
And you were getting it firsthand from him. Mm-hmm. So it was literally what he went through
right.
is being,
right.
you know, you may not want to pass that on like in the same
right.
way, but he had that
right.
firsthand, and I'm sure it affected.
I'm so proud to report that my daughter's never had an eating
it's
disorder.
See,
really?
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Beautiful.
Amazing.
Yeah. She's. I don't think she's ever been on a diet. I've
no
never
way.
Heard her say that
mm-hmm.
she's
wow.
fat. She isn't. Not even.
No.
Oh my God, she's beautiful, unbelievably
yeah.
gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And no, she eats. Food has just been
wow.
her passion. She has
yeah.
such a healthy relationship to food.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you did something right.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah.
That's
and
amazing.
I think it's hard for mothers to know always what the right thing to say and do is. And if there's any mm-hmm. mothers out there listening, I know you're probably like, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to say
yeah.
and do? It's really tough. But
well, heal your own. Right?
Exactly.
Little
step.
Girls get so much of their body mm-hmm. image from their moms
exactly.
and the attitudes they're conveying, even
mm-hmm.
if they're not saying it directly. You know?
Yes.
I really had to work on that because
yeah.
I. Mm-hmm. I knew that she would see, you know, monkey see, monkey do, not what I
say. Not just what you say, exactly. It's so not just, true. You can go and tell your daughter she's beautiful and perfect, just the way
and then
she
you're
is.
In the mirror, she sees you saying, oh, I'm fat, I'm
like,
this,
I remember
right.
my mom being like, oh, I'm so fat, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So we have a call, by the way.
All righty.
Should I put these on?
Yes, you do. Yes, you shall.
Hi, you're on live with Dr. Deborah and therapist Kelly.
Hi, you guys were talking about just how, you know, when you raise your child so that they don't have any eating issues. I'm just wondering, like, any words of advice? I have a 10-year-old daughter.
Sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, we were just literally talking about that. I think we're living in a day and age where, I mean, it's tough as a mother because she's constantly looking at social media and billboards and mm-hmm. magazines, and it's everywhere. And we were just saying, I think if you yourself as the mother are coming at a real place of self-love and self-acceptance in your own body, and you teach them to love and appreciate the foods that you're eating, to make that a beautiful spiritual experience, to enjoy the foods that they're eating, then she will model that after you. And I think I really watched my own mother and learned from her as well and what she was saying and doing. And I think you can be the best example of self-love and self-acceptance for her.
Absolutely. I would add one more piece. If you've ever heard of the intuitive eating model, it's a wonderful model for, you know, eating when you're hungry but not starving, and stopping when you're full but not overly full. And all foods are on the program if you want them. There's no food that's taboo, so that foods don't have this emotional component to them, like this is a good food and this is a bad food, because naturally we do want to have healthy bodies until we get all screwed up, right? Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. My question is, she's actually really thin and it makes me nervous. I grew up, I was really thin, and I feel like she already likes the fact that she's thin, even though I tell her it doesn't look healthy. I feel like she's just kind of enjoys the fact.
Does she limit the foods that she eats at all, or talk about weighing herself or counting calories at all?
No, she doesn't. But she has had a friend who was telling her that they shouldn't eat any carbs.
And it's starting at 10.
Right.
So awesome.
And my guess is also she's being fed a lot of positive reinforcement from her peers who may be a little bit overweight, or
they're jealous.
They're not matching the social media imagery of being so thin. So she's probably getting a lot of accolades outside of the home, is my guess.
I would really start just feeding her self-worth and self-acceptance also on a deeper level, is giving her compliments and reinforcing who she is as a person, not necessarily what she looks like, and focusing on her strengths as a human being, and having an open dialogue as well about the images that we see in the magazines and what they really are. Like, there's a whole chapter about, you know, retouching in my book as well. Like, just making her aware of what goes into those images, why we're being sold them, just so that she can make a different connection to
That's
them.
That's a great point. I like the before and afters too, when I see models, like before all the lighting and the retouching and everything like that. And I'm also, I loved what both of you said. And the only other thing that I would add too is I'm a big proponent of volunteering, kids volunteering, and I need to get better at this with my kids. But just so they can recognize, you can get you get self-esteem by doing esteemable acts. So, you know, if you're helping somebody else, that is like the best form of self-esteem that you can get.
Yeah, that's a really good
There's idea. Also subtle languaging to be aware of, in terms of, because we'll say things to people like, okay, so you're lucky that you're thin, as if you're unlucky if your
you're
body
not,
type is not that. And so that's, again, putting too much juice on size, as opposed to what our dear guest is saying about health and well-being. So even unless the pediatrician is saying you need to intervene in some way because she is actually too thin, I would also just recommend just stepping out of that. And also, is her father at all influential in the ways that he speaks to her? Does, because sometimes fathers step into body image issues where they shouldn't, because it is an invasion to some degree. So that'd be something to look out for as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. He just tries to get her to eat more than anything, but that makes sense.
I would let her just be who she is right now. I know, just in terms of, we can also, there are some girls in my class felt insecure because they were too thin and they wanted to have more curves. And the girls that had curves wanted to be thinner. And we're all trying to be something that we're not. And just letting her be. She's only 10. She's not hit puberty yet. And just really positive reinforcements about who she is.
Right.
Not making one thing right or wrong. Let her be healthy and happy and just focus on being a 10-year-old.
Like, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much
that
for calling.
That was awesome. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Super interesting. Yeah.
All right.
It is
I'm
sad.
I'm having a hot flash.
Oh, no. You okay?
Yeah, just saying.
We are in an LA heat wave, but it's nice and cool in here.
Well, it is. It's so hot outside.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it was 108 when I was driving
Shit.
In.
Yeah. Crazy.
So I do want to focus a little bit more, if you have time, on your actual book and all
And just to say,
things,
it
right?
was written for young women specifically.
Okay.
You know, what age range?
I mean, I would say, I mean, I tried to make it as broad as possible so that it doesn't feel like it's too young for some or too old for others. So I believe, like the caller that just spoke with us, she wants to read that with her daughter. That's a great journey to go on.
Yes, I love it.
It really is.
It's very accessible.
What a bonding experience, too, that they could go through.
And I think it's great for mothers to read it, too. Like my mom, my own mom said, who I have an amazing relationship with. It was just this dialogue we had around food and body image that was a struggle. It's not anymore. But she said, I wish I had read this when you were a teen girl, so I would have known. Yeah. Because it's hard to always know what the right thing to say and do is.
Sure.
But this is a brilliant journey for mother and daughter to
Absolutely.
Go on.
And Tapping is in here, by the way. So she explains it, which is great.
Yay. And can you maybe give, like, you have 5 simple stress busters. Don't give them all away. But maybe 1 or 2 busters for the teenage girl.
I talk more than just about food and our body image in the book, because I think, you know, life has an impact on how we feel in so many areas. And girls are going through so much stress. I mean, that was probably one of the most stressful periods of my life. Exams, anxiety, peer pressure, body image, all of that stuff mixed into one. One of the great things I do is I love to move my body from a place of love instead of the obsessive burning calories. I have to lose weight. So if it's 10 minutes of yoga in my living room, or I go to a dance class, or I put on Beyonce in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Like, I did that before I came here because I had
to
shift my energy to get positive. And I love to meditate. I also talk about, we like to sometimes go to like worst case scenarios in our heads and let Little Miss Critical take over and say, if you do this, then this is going to happen and your life will be over. And that can cause a lot of stress. Sometimes, you know what? Sit with the feeling that you're having. Go, okay, what actually is the worst case scenario? Is that as bad as I'm making it seem? Or am I going to be okay?
Sure.
Different techniques to just really tune in with where we're at, who our Little Miss Critical is, and obviously tapping. Tapping can take 5 minutes if you're stressed.
And you can do tapping by yourself.
Absolutely.
Exactly. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
Which is always so beautiful when we have something that doesn't really rely on someone else.
Yeah.
Because while we do tell people to reach out to others, use the resources around you, sometimes there just isn't anybody around.
No.
Yeah.
Sometimes there just isn't a bucket outside that we can have water in.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
So we have to rely on ourselves to have a bucket, too.
Yeah,
definitely. But if you need help, please ask
Absolutely.
For it.
Reach absolutely.
Out.
Yeah. But that's part of help is learning to help ourselves as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And tuning in with who our intuition is, our inner wisdom. So I talk about Little Miss Critical and then how to release her and tap into our positivity, our inner wisdom, the language of kindness, positivity, and gratitude, and how the language that we use to speak about ourselves can really affect our mind, body, and spirit. So just being aware of that, are you putting yourself down constantly by the words that you use, the language that you use to speak about yourself? Or could you flip that thought and use a more positive reinforcement?
Kelly,
like
I can be a great cook if I choose to be.
My husband may differ, but that's okay. No, but I hear you. You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, it does. That programming makes a difference.
And if we can teach our young women that from a young age, just imagine the women they're going to be as they enter the workplace, as they go into relationships, as it all begins with self. I say in the book, the most important relationship you will ever have is the one that you have with yourself.
Absolutely. It's true.
It's what decides how our relationships will be surrounding us.
Absolutely.
And the one thing I want to say, too, is like, so I'm 40 now and I'm thinking back to my 20s and I
and
was
looking
miserable.
14. Nah, that's too young. 32.
Like not you. 40, that's for sure.
No, your skies are so
No, 14,
stupid,
I said.
No, I know.
But I feel better in this bracket than I ever did in my 20s. And so I want to say that out loud because I think, you know, when you're in your 20s, you really feel like you're in it and it's like, oh, it's so hard. And, you know, I could never have imagined that I would have felt better at this age than I did in my 20s. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just important.
Because you've got to let some things go, not just growing, but also just some things become, we get our priorities more in check. Yeah. Like, I don't really care as much what somebody thinks of me. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big one for young women. For Stop caring about what everyone else thinks.
And it's developmentally appropriate also. It's how we define our identity. So you can't tell a young girl, don't care about what other people say, but how much power are you going to give that?
Right.
And do you also care about what you think?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the most important thing is trusting your intuition.
One quick question, because I know people who have suffered anorexia or are struggling with somebody they love who has that, they do lose their cues of hunger at times, right? They really don't understand anymore. Mm-hmm. Their body is not singing to them, oh, I actually am hungry. So I know the intuitive eating model is actually a little bit advanced for those. Do you have any tools or techniques, or is it back to the self-love, just practice that and the hunger will come?
I think you have to take it step by step. Do it little by little. If that's really something that scares you, I get my clients to take steps every week. Their homework is to go and do something that is going to help with their growth. I think really learning to listen to your gut instincts, your intuition, and learn to trust your body again. And that be conscious as you're eating of the and have joy over it. And if you feel like you get full, you get full. But learning to get back into the habit of eating in general, taking that step by step. And if there's fear and anxiety that comes up around it, tap on it.
Right, exactly. It's so nice. I love it.
Yeah.
Gone.
I stopped doing it after that lovely lady was here. Have you been doing it? It's going to inspire me.
It is going to inspire me too, because I forget about it. Like, it's just not one of my go-tos.
Yeah. Now you can literally do it in the car. So, like, people might think I'm crazy. Or I'll be driving and I reach a stoplight and I just tap on the karate chop point. I'd sometimes say it in my mind. Or I just am like, okay, even though I'm feeling anxiety right now, I'm just choosing to love and accept myself through this.
Okay. And just, you know, maybe we can find continuing education seminar on tapping.
Oh, sure.
And that the two of us
will do
that together.
It's also called emotional
freedom technique.
Just in case anybody wants to look it up. And
I have a video and info all on my website.
Great.
So if you want to go find that out.
Which is time to do
all
that promotion.
I was just
going to
say, can you tell us your website and all that?
My Instagram is girl. I'm trying to say it with a rolling R, because when I say girl in an English accent, people don't always know what I'm saying. So it's girl_unfiltered. My website is girlunfiltered.com. And then on my Instagram, on my website, I also have an incredible free body love meditation, which is really powerful. 10 minute. I get messages pretty much every day about women who started crying, releasing stuff during that. So that is a brilliant way to start your healing journey.
I have so many clients.
I know.
Here,
I was
so many.
Too.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. It's just beautiful. And you're just such a beautiful
person. You. Thank you. Thank you. But yeah, the book's available on Amazon. It's great for women of all ages. I've had my 93-year-old grandmother seriously read this and learn to love and accept her body in a different way too.
I love it.
So
yes,
it's all out there online.
And people, please buy a copy of this, because you're working toward getting a publisher.
Yes,
coming
in the next few months.
Yeah,
so
numbers are really important.
Every review and number helps. But really, just I'm building a community online, and that's what I love the most. Is just join our tribe. It's a self-love tribe that women uplifting each other and talking honestly.
Beautiful.
If you want some uplifting social media, that's the place to be.
There's something to be said for that,
Absolutely. We can use that form in a positive way.
Yeah,
it's
definitely
a great message. If you take one message away today, take that one.
Yeah.
But
Thank you.
Again, Learning to Love the Girl in the Mirror by Helena Grace Donald. And it's a teenage guide to living a happy and healthy life, but I'm going to read it from cover to cover. Although I just got it. I will, for sure.
Yes, exactly.
And I will write
you
a review.
Thank
I promise.
You.
It's
Thank
beautiful.
You so much.
Thank
and
you.
Next week we have, what is it? The Headache?
The Headache handbook, Healing Handbook.
Something.
Yes, and the author of that.
Yes,
name is Jan.
Jan something. We'll figure it out.
Sorry, Jan, but
exactly,
we'll redeem ourselves next week. Promise.
And then we'll see if she'll be into tapping for headaches.
That'd be really interesting.
That'd be really funny.
Yeah, it works for that too.
Yeah.
So cool.
Any other things you're promoting?
I mean, just really join the tribe. Yeah, the meditation is the best way. I also, you know, head to the website because I have lots of free giveaways on that. And I just really want women to join this community and feel supported and loved. And so, yeah, @girl_unfiltered. But I really think the meditation is a brilliant way to start your day.
Love it.
So it's another great stress buster. So head to that.
Love it. Sure. Yay. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a beautiful day.
Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.